across Wisconsin from Civic Media. This is Up North News Radio. Now, live from our Lake Wissota studio, here's the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Breitlow.
And I brought people, too. Greg Bach from Waukesha. Selena Heller, Up North News reporter from Eau Claire. Dr. Kristen Lyerly, somewhere up on the range. And Civic Media meteorologist Brittany Merlot. And we'll be joined later on by authors Tom Manis and Christy Manis, who have a book called Secret Wisconsin, A Guide to the Weird, Wonderful, and Obscure. Kristen's first in line with some weird fact about Wisconsin, I think. So that'll come up right after Brittany tells us about the forecast, which includes some precautions about potential grass fire dangers today with the dry humidity and the winds. But Brittany, you cannot argue with the conditions over the weekend. It was just gorgeous.
This weekend was fantastic. I'm so glad we got so warm on the weekend. We got outside to enjoy it. Oh my goodness. But if you didn't, oh man, we are going to see some heavy rain headed our way by tomorrow, and it's going to be a wet week. So today's your last day. Like you mentioned, no burning. A big chunk of the state is in a very high fire danger right now. So that would spread so rapidly if any fire starts. So keep that in mind today. Highs still comfortable. We'll climb into the mid-60s with some sunshine. But then the storm will hit tomorrow. It'll start moving into the state by late morning and take over and drench us. This is going to be a soaking rain from Tuesday night through Wednesday, and it could even linger until Thursday as well. Again, we're looking at 1 to 2 inches of rainfall, so we could see some localized flooding. You're going to want the umbrella that is headed our way, plus some storms mixed in there too.
What do we got here? Rob from Tigerton says it's sunny and 39, a perfect weekend weather-wise. And he remembers 6 years ago getting some 30 inches of snow, and that's why you appreciate these warm April weekends. I might have to fact-check the 30 inches on there. And he goes on to say the sturgeon are spawning on the Wolf River, headed to Shawano to check it out at the Wolf River Dam in Sturgeon Park. So there you go. We've got spawning sturgeon, and again, not nearly the snow that we had 6 years ago.
Nope. I remember that big melt too last year. We had all the snow on the ground and the massive melt and the flooding. So we're in good conditions. Just don't burn.
Yeah, no, I was looking at photos from a year ago. Yeah, you know, little Facebook memories, they pop up. And
yes.
We went to Loopy's on the river near Chippewa Falls. And it was fun to watch, but I'm like, this thing wouldn't have to rise much further to take out Loopies and take us out too. It was very impressive last year.
Loopies.
Oh yeah. We love Loopy.
I'll have to go.
He's a good guy. So up north.
I know. All right, fine.
Up north is the best.
Oh no, I don't. When he said he's like, I'm looking out on the lake and I'm looking out on the farm, I'm like, oh, I'm so jealous.
Yes. Loopy, if you're listening, you're going to have to get the party bus ready because I'm going to have them. You're going to pick all these people up at my place sometime this summer.
Heck yeah.
Take them down to your place. So
Let's go.
We are arranged. All right, Brittany, thank you. Have a great day.
You too.
All right. So again, we've got the authors of Secret Wisconsin, A Guide to the Weird, Wonderful, and Obscure coming up. And Kristen, you have a weird story you wanted to share?
No, it's not weird. It's wonderful.
Oh, it's wonderful. I'm sorry. Hit us with your Wisconsin wonderfulness.
I drive on Highway 29 all the time because I work in Minnesota. So I drive past Doc's Harley-Davidson in Bonduelle all the time. And I always look at it and think, well, that looks like an interesting place. We finally went to Doc's Harley-Davidson. I've never seen anything like it. It is the hugest collection of heartfelt, wonderful oddities, and Doc gave us a tour, showed us his reptile collection, his mammoth tusk. I got to sit in a 67 GTO, which is like almost like the Le Mans that I grew up driving. It was so great spending time with Doc and that whole crew, and it was just like every piece of it was authentic and heartfelt, and I loved it.
That's the place that looks like the car from the Dukes of Hazzard flying over the building, and we'd pass by it for again, years and years. And when our grandsons were like, you know, 3 and 10 or something like that, we thought, let's stop in there. That was one of the best days of summer, was watching. They just loved all the stuff, all the oddities about it. So, yeah, I'm glad you got to stop. It was like our own little up north version of House on the Rock.
Yes, and so much more. It just keeps like it, doors keep opening in front of you, and you're like, wow. And the history and the his love for the mechanics of it, the things that he's made out of Harley parts. It is just fascinating. Please go there and try to eat the 6-pound burger if you can.
The what?
Oh, yeah. Next door, there's the Timeline Cafe, and they have a 6-pound burger challenge. If you can eat the whole thing, you get to ride this very interesting motorcycle that he built. Or just bring your friends and eat
that
the burger
together.
That
doesn't sound like a prize. It sounds like if you eat a 6-pound burger, we'll allow you to die in our restaurant.
Yeah. I'm like, if there's not a crash cart nearby, I'm not sure I would go with that.
Bring your friends.
Yeah, of course. So here. Another thing about this time of year is, school's starting to wrap up. And so Celine's going to talk about the school bus fleet and how it's getting more and more modern across Wisconsin. But it's also baby farm animal season. And let's go with that one first, because there's a place not too far away from us here, just west of us. And and baby farm animals are like their big draw every spring. Tell us more about it.
Well, yes. And I remember when he started, because he came on the morning show with me and I said, can you bring me a lamb so I can hold it during the show? So we talked about that and he remembered that. And it's John and Julie Govan in Menominee, and they have quit dairy farming. They sold their cattle about 20 years ago. And so they said, what are we going to do now? And so then they decided the following year, we're going to open up the farm to have people come and learn about the farm, learn about animals, and show them what a glimpse of farming is like. And this is John Govan.
This is an experience like most farmers in the country don't get to have. This is the most wonderful experience to be able to host everybody at this farm, to give them a little glimpse into agriculture. You know, we're so far detached from agriculture now. It's 5 generations removed. The average consumer is 5 generations removed. Last year, we had a group of 75 kids on a field trip from Eau Claire, and we think of Eau Claire as still being somewhat rural. Of those 75 children, none of them had ever been on a farm.
None of them had ever been
on
a farm.
Can you believe that?
Yeah, I can, sadly. Yeah. Now in this day and age, the number of people who have farm exposure. Can we talk for a bit about the background noise there? many lambs.
300 lambs in the background. And we were trying to find a place, and in the barn, it was all the goats, like, just the answering each other, and it was really loud everywhere. But we go here every year, and it's just, you know, I grew up on a farm, so I have to get Emery, like, the farm is the best thing ever. And she thought that too, all with all the baby animals. Last year, not so much, because a chick, she was holding a chick and it went to the bathroom on her, so that was enough. We had to leave immediately.
And I will pet it and squeeze it and squeeze it and squeeze it.
A lot of that with little kids.
Yep. And are they still doing that? There's only a limited range where they've got the baby animals there?
Yes, this last weekend was the last weekend that they opened up. So now this summer, they'll have strawberries. In the fall, they have a corn maze and a haunted trail. So that's what they kind of reinvented the farm, and that's what they do now. About 30 to 35,000 people come.
And Kristen, you're doing quite the tour of the district here. I'm sure that's included some things that are farm and farm related. Maybe you haven't been petting baby animals, but I'm not sure.
I recommend it.
Yeah, I mean, my grandparents were dairy farmers. My mom grew up on a farm. That was my favorite thing to do, is go visit Grandma and Grandpa Sobel and hang out with the kittens in the barn and help Grandpa with the milking.
When Sherry's parents were still doing dairy farming, and of course had to do a lot of field work, and Mason, our first grandson, who's now 17, but back when he was like, I don't know, 4 or 5 years old, he got to go with Grandpa out in the tractor, out in the field, and he learned the coolest thing, that when you're out in the middle of the field, if you got to go to the bathroom, you just get out of the tractor. And apparently you just go right over there by the tire, which was fine, except that, like, you know, later that day or the next day, we see him just peeing on a tree in the front yard, because that's, you know, Grandpa said you can just pee outside. That's what you do.
Carry it over.
No, it's only if you're doing field work. where that gets to happen.
Yeah. Noted. Thank you.
Yeah.
I'll pass that on.
Selena's going to tell us more about the ever-growing electric school bus fleet coming up in just a couple of minutes here. First, we'll do a little sports at 7:16. Good news, you guys. I don't have to explain the NBA play-in tournament to you. Aren't you relieved?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, thank God.
Amazing. I like being a fan. I heard you guys talking about this earlier, and I love sports. I'm kind of in Greg's camp, though. I can't keep up with it all, especially this time of year. We've got the basketball, the baseball, the hockey, and, you know, in Green Bay, we're always talking about football. We never take a break. Mm-hmm. It's just a lot.
It is. We got a Snapchat video from my younger daughter, and it's a shot, just a shot of the TV, and the Masters is on, and the caption says, yeah, Charlotte, that does it to me too. And pans off the TV because the golf is on. And Charlotte, who's, you know, just turned two, is just completely splayed out on the couch fast asleep. Just out. Which is why I don't watch golf regularly on TV, because it would totally do the same thing to me. But getting back to the Bucks, they had been the number two seed pretty much the entire season, which meant they were going to have to play one of the winners of the play-in tournament to start off the playoffs. But on the last day of the regular season yesterday, in losing to Orlando 113-88, that dropped the Bucks to the 3 seed, so they don't have to worry about this goofy play-in tournament, because now instead of playing the 7 seed, they'll play the 6 seed, which is the Indiana Pacers. Unfortunately, the Indiana Pacers have beat them 3 out of 4 times during the regular season, and Game 1 isn't until next Sunday. So they've got a little bit of time to figure it out and not let the rust settle in. So we'll have a lot to talk about a week from today, when the Bucks formally begin their playoff run. The Brewers went up against Corbin Burns for the first time since trading him to Baltimore, and William Contreras started off the game nicely. Second pitch of the game, hits a home run off Burns, but ultimately the Orioles won the game and salvaged one game out of the series, 6-4. The Brewers won the first two games of the series and come home right away for a quick 3-game set against the San Diego Padres tonight, tomorrow night, and Wednesday afternoon. And you can hear those games on News from the Center in Richland Center, WRJN and Racine, Oshkosh Air Support, and 98Q Country. And after that 3-game series this week, the Brewers hit the road again for an important division road trip, 3 games in St. Louis next weekend, followed by 4 in Pittsburgh. We'll have more with Selena Heller coming up in just a bit. First, a reminder that wherever you're listening across Wisconsin on this Monday morning, April 15th, when you're here, you're up north, live from Lake Wasota on the Civic Media Radio Network. Play Sherry's favorite Billy Joel song for the occasion today. Come out, Virginia, don't let me wait. You Catholic girl, start. I have no idea if they played this song or not, because CBS cut out of the Billy Joel concert because the Masters Golf Tournament ran long. So I figured we deserved an extra dose of Billy Joel this morning. All right, Selena Heller, Kristen Lyerly, Greg Bach, Pat Kreitlow, all here on Up North News Radio, 7:21 now on this Monday, April 15th. And I recall when school buses, back in my day, boy, they would just belch out the black smoke from the tailpipe and everything. It's a different world out there now, thankfully, as school districts and city bus lines across the state upgrade their fleet thanks to some things that President Biden and a Democratic Congress did a couple of years back, Selena.
Well, yeah. Can you all remember, or can you all think when I say, you know, starting up the bus, the sound?
And oh,
you,
yeah, the rumble.
Did you hear that? Yep. Oh, my goodness. Well, when I was there, so I went on, you know, the after-school route last week on one of the routes. It was an hour long. But when the bus driver got in the bus, he's like, okay, I'm going to turn on the bus. And it was just like, and you barely heard anything. It was the oddest thing. Mm-hmm. So school buses are a lot more quiet now these days. So the bipartisan infrastructure law and through the Clean Bus Program is providing $5 billion over the next 5 years to replace existing school buses across the country with zero or low emission models. And in Wisconsin, 15 districts took advantage of the program, the first wave of the program, and 65 electric buses were awarded to school districts across Wisconsin. So one of them was Mondovi.
Okay, who are we going to hear from?
So I went along with Dan Danzinger. He's been a bus driver in the district for 6 years, and he told me all about the buses, as well as their transportation manager, Shelley Tigan. And so it was a really interesting ride. And Dan told me that just some of the differences in the buses. And so here's Dan.
Well, there is one big difference. These buses recharge the battery when you take your foot off the accelerator. Let's say you're going down a hill, you take your foot off the accelerator, and it's like engine braking. The power goes back into the batteries. So that's quite a lot different. So the first week was learning how to operate it. We did have classes and stuff for this, but the second week now that we're in, it's a lot more comfortable. I've learned that you don't hardly have to touch the brake pedal at all. It'll basically come to a stop by itself.
That was something I'd had to learn as well when we bought a hybrid vehicle last year. Yeah. First, how quiet it is, and but also, yeah, it, you know, you have to treat the braking a little bit differently, which is fine. I mean, you can learn it. You just have to adjust to it. Now, for us, it was a Hyundai, and so because you can't really hear the engine, when you put it in reverse, you get this very loud backup alarm. It's like beep, beep. First time it happened, I'm like, am I in a garbage truck? What is going on here? I'm like, nope, that's what happens with hybrids. I don't know if the school buses have that. If not, they probably should, because they run so much quieter.
They do have that. Mm-hmm. Yes.
And so then you went for a ride with Dan and talked more with him.
Yes, we talked along the route, and he kind of explained the buttons to me and just how neat they were and what questions people had kind of going into this, and what they as drivers, they kind of like, how is this going to be? Of course, when you get new things, you have to, there's a learning curve. But the big question a lot of people have across the state, especially this state, because we have cold winters, how are these buses going to perform in the winter? So that's one of the big questions that they've gotten. The transportation manager called Alaska. She called Northern Minnesota schools that have had buses, and they assure her, you know, they perform well. So she said, you know, I wanted to figure all that out before we said, yes, let's do this. And here's Dan talking about the buses in the winter.
I think we were all a little bit uncertain because we get pretty harsh winters sometimes. This winter was an exception. But another bus driver that doesn't drive the electric asked me this morning if I think they'll work in the wintertime, and I believe they will. It's just going to be a matter of warming up the batteries before you hit the road.
Okay, but this, I now have to ask what that noise was we were hearing, because apparently there are some serious potholes in that yeah. area.
We were driving.
Well, thanks to the infrastructure plan, those potholes were filled.
That was him driving.
What was that, Greg?
The bus rattles. Yeah. You hear rattling. But, you know, that was me in the bus talking with him, and I was behind him in the seat behind him, and you could still hear him. So that's how quiet the bus was.
What'd you say, Greg?
I was going to say, thanks to the bipartisan infrastructure bill, those potholes will be filled shortly.
Yes, they will. That much is coming along with all these investments that are being made, Kristen. Well,
and that legitimate question about how do these batteries do in the winter, I have an electric car, and I can tell you that our range is half of what it is in the summer. And it's scary when you're driving around, because you can't just go to a gas station and fill up if you get low. So that's something that causes a lot of people anxiety. But I think as we get used to that concept and comfortable with it, it'll become something that we don't worry about as much.
Right. This isn't the norm. And that's what these districts are kind of hoping for, that more districts will grab onto this because they keep their spares so they can go the long drives to sporting events and take the teams to other schools, because when they get there, they can't charge up because they don't have the infrastructure. They don't have the charging stations to do so. So they have their spares for long distances.
Yeah. I mean, that's part of the transition to, something where the range on these batteries gets better. You get more charging stations that are out there. And of course, the whole reason for this is not just for, cleaner burning buses that do less damage to, our natural resources, but it creates jobs, where those buses have to be assembled, where those charging stations have to be put in. All of this is, again, I talk about this all the time. Somebody finally doing the work. Somebody saying, we can talk about charging stations. We can talk about electric vehicles, but, how are we going to get this done? And that's what we got done through the bipartisan infrastructure law and the Inflation Reduction Act and, the American Rescue Plan before that. And, Kristen, it's like you said last hour, politics versus policy. And yet, for whatever reason, the Biden administration or the Biden campaign is still trying to get that message across about these are the policies that did, that have done so much good. And I just know you're going to be hearing that from people as well going, gosh, the economy is still bad. At least that's what I hear. But they'll tell you their economy is good. They've just been fed a steady diet of cynical news from other sectors, shall we say.
Yeah. Well, let's think about the impact that clean energy has on Wisconsin, because we don't have fossil fuels, but we have hydro, we have air, we have sun. We can generate fuels that are healthier and that are more environmentally friendly. So this really does have a positive impact from a power standard in the state of Wisconsin. This is exciting for us.
It is. All right, Kristen, thanks so much for checking in. Good luck with the working and then coming back and doing the campaigning, and give us an update again real soon.
Sounds good. Thanks, guys. Have a great Monday.
Thanks, you too. Selena, thank you so much. Check out more of her work over at upnorthnewswi.com and upnorthnewswi on social media. Coming up next, we'll have the authors of a new book, Secret Wisconsin, A Guide to the Weird, Wonderful, and Obscure. That's coming up next. You're up north. I be laughing a bit too loud. Oh, that never hurt no one. A little Bewitched music marking Elizabeth Montgomery, born this day in 1933, passed away in 1995, but seems appropriate to talk about Bewitched as we head into the next segment here on a fascinating book that takes you all around our state. It's called Secret Wisconsin, A Guide to the Weird, Wonderful, and Obscure, and Tom and Christy Manis join us, the co-authors of that book. Tom and Christy, good morning.
Good morning. Good
morning.
So nice to have you here. Let's start with just what people can expect to read about in Secret Wisconsin. How do you gather everything that's there and decide which made the cut for this book?
well, it was hard.
It was very hard. The first thing is everything in the book is pretty much what you won't find on the first few pages of Google search or Instagram. So because we like finding unique, quirky things, because we like quirky things. And so one example of how you can start with the book is one of our favorite things and we had to start the book with Welcome to Cleveland. And that is just one of those quirky things that you want to tell the story.
Some people know about it, but when you fly into Milwaukee, you fly over a guy's house, and on the top he has painted Welcome to Cleveland. So it confuses a lot of flyers into the Milwaukee airport.
I'll bet
to
it
the
does.
Point where there's some flights where the pilot comes on and says, "We are not in Cleveland, this is Milwaukee." And it's a real quirky thing. And the guy still paints it almost every year.
He keeps it fresh. So it's really visible.
That is funny. You raise in the notes for the book, all kinds of fascinating questions that people can get answers to, like why a temporary circus board, a circus billboard from 1885 still exists on a building. Did someone really exchange water with aliens for extraterrestrial pancakes? Where can you honor deceased postal letter carriers? Have you been eating your brats the wrong way? No, wait, that one isn't so much weird, Wisconsin. That's like massive debates across Wisconsin. I suppose you get into that a bit as well.
Definitely. But most people in Wisconsin eat a brat and a long bun. But those are fighting words in Sheboygan because they have a hard roll. They use a hard roll and a round hard roll. And most people will do a double and put two brats on it. So what we found, though, is we talked to people across the state. A lot of people don't know about that, though, so that's why we had to add it. It's one of those quirky things, and you eke it. There's even a brat oath that you can take to make sure that you're eating it the right way forever and ever. So it's one of those quirky fun things.
Now, how do you eat your brat?
I wouldn't call it a hard roll, but I'm very picky about buns that are large enough and almost qualify as a hard roll, depending on how the grocery store is preparing them. But on a round hard roll, that would be a new one for me. I assume you've tried it that way now.
We have not, but we will. Okay.
But you've told people that this is something to expect when you get to the Sheboygan area. People
yes,
are going to hold
definitely.
You to it. Wow. Okay. It seems like, now look, with our proximity to Chicago, I get that there are plenty of places that say Al Capone went through here. I've been in places in a few other states and in Regina, Canada has a tour because Al Capone allegedly spent some time there. It makes me wonder if he actually got anything done in Chicago, but he most definitely does have a Wisconsin presence among the things that you outline in the book.
Yes, definitely. And everybody's got an Al Capone story. But when you look up his house and the location, a lot of people have it wrong. And we really dug in and had to find it. And then we had to go visit ourselves in person to make sure that, it's where it was.
I'm amazed at the amount of gangster stories from the state of Wisconsin, though.
Oh, yeah.
You said, he was everywhere.
He was.
And not only him, mm-hmm. but a lot of them.
Well, it was, again, that Prohibition era created an entire culture, created an entire part of the economy. My wife talks about how her grandfather was a moonshine runner for a while. There was a lot of it that was run up and down, the Wisconsin side of Lake Michigan and then out and about from there. So yeah, the Hayward area, has a hideaway as well that's marked with Al Capone. But yeah, the gangster stories are quite notable, and there are many of them. Let's go back a step before you started collecting everything weird about Wisconsin. Tell us about some of your other work, as writers, and was that something you've always been looking to do? Is that how you met? Was wanting to write about things like Wisconsin? What's your background?
Well, I think we met in college, actually in North Carolina. Which is kind of funny.
A long time ago.
And we love to travel. So I think we're travelers. We love to find those unique, quirky things on the back roads and two-lane highways. And it's just stuff you keep in the back of your mind all the time. And like what we found in Wisconsin, a lot of where we knew about. And so we decided, we love to travel and we love to see new things and we wanted to share it with people. So
we've been writing forever. For instance, our son is 27. And his first year of life, we took 6 weeks and drove to Alaska with a baby. And the same year, he also went down to the equator almost. And we've been going ever since.
Wow.
We never really thought about writing books until fairly recently. And basically, a publisher caught us. And we agreed to it.
Right. And now we have a new one coming out, Historic Wisconsin Roadsides. We're working on that one right now. That will be in the spring, next spring. It'll be released.
I think that you know, we've had on authors about, you know, Supper Club books, for example, which is, you know, its own, you know, culture here in Wisconsin. And so I like that you're getting into the roadsides, which, again, there's just so much you can discover off the beaten path, whether it's these roadsides, these supper clubs, like you said, the places where gangsters stayed. It's almost fair to say you could never run out of material if you wanted to keep doing this.
Oh, definitely. Yeah, we had a list of about 300 things that didn't make this book.
So there's probably going to be a second
sequel,
edition eventually.
Yes.
Yeah. So, and that's just, you know, quirky things for Secret Wisconsin. But I mean, there's so much out there. Wisconsin is a quirky state, and we love it. It's the quirkiest state we've been to, and we've been to 48 states. So we still have Hawaii and the elusive Rhode Island to get to. So we've seen a lot, and we've lived all over the country, and Wisconsin truly is a quirky state.
No doubt there. So now you've got a couple of book signings that are coming up.
We do. This Saturday, we're going to be in downtown Madison at Little Luxuries. It's a unique gift shop. You'll find a lot of things you didn't know you needed. And it's 4 minutes off of the square. So you go to the farmer's market, you can walk 4 minutes to Little Luxuries, and we'll have a book signing there.
That's on State Street, which is always a fun walk.
Oh, yeah.
And then next Saturday, the 27th, we're going to be at Spooner at White Bird Creations doing a book signing then.
So in working with this, and you said a publisher found you, how did you find the process worked out? Was it a case of one of you was kind of the principal writer and the other was kind of the editor, or how do you do this as a team?
The weird thing is we have been working together for 29 years. We've been together every day, 24 hours a day, and we like it like that. Our desks are right next to each other. So for this book, we each kind of took a little bit of a story, but we talked it through. It's both of us in every single thing in the book.
And some of the, you know, I knew that I would enjoy writing it better, and some I knew she would enjoy writing it better. And so we just say, hey, you take this one, I'll take this one. We just split it up and did it that way.
And apart from, I mean, like you said, you've got hundreds literally of Wisconsin stories to tell. And you mentioned the couple of states you've yet to go to. What has your appetite been like for world travel and whether you might write something about, you know, your global excursions?
Well, we love world travel. We love going international. And I don't know, it's probably something down the road. Right now we're focused on road trips in the U.S. and, you know, Midwest and Wisconsin.
We were traveling a lot overseas before the pandemic, and the pandemic kind of changed everything.
Yes.
Yeah. And we're not big on getting in a plane right now.
I'm with you.
Honest, yeah. That's it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No,
and we love road trips. I mean,
yeah.
That's how we travel. We travel road trips, and we go all day. Our motto is the wheels aren't turning. We're not seeing anything.
Oh, I like that. Well, it reminds me of something Sherry said early on when we made like our first trip to Disney World and the girls were little. And so, of course, somebody had to give us the whole timeshare, you know, spiel. Mm-hmm. And Sherry's response about not getting a timeshare, she said, well, I haven't been everywhere yet. Once I've been everywhere, then maybe there's some place I'll want to come to year after year, but I haven't been everywhere yet. She really ought to put that on a t-shirt.
Yeah.
That's so true. Yeah, that's so true.
So back to the book for a second here, and I don't want to give away too much because people can order this through, you know, their local bookseller or online. But being that we talk about, you know, politics quite a bit on this show, you've got a note in here that the book tells you why JFK made a deposit in Spooner and how Teddy Roosevelt's long speech saved his life from an attempted assassination. You can pick which either one you want and maybe fill in some of the blanks for us.
There's a hotel in Milwaukee that Roosevelt was going to give a speech at, and somebody tried to kill him. And what saved him was a very, 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 very thick speech that he had in his pocket.
He had it folded in his pocket, and it helped stop the bullet.
Yeah.
And he kept the surgeons couldn't get the bullet out, so he kept it in his body, you know, the rest of his life.
It was,
which was actually something I never knew, but researching for this book, I found it, and I had to go and see where it happened, and it was really interesting.
Well, it's funny again, because they didn't have Kevlar back then, but no. You know, enough paper, especially a big speech wadded up and put in your breast pocket, you know, helps. Or I've talked about how, you know, my dad, you know, way back in the 50s when he was playing hockey, a doctor asked him 40 years later, said, "Did you used to play hockey with newspaper wrapped around your legs?" And he's like, "Yeah, because that's all they had, you know, yeah. for shin guards was, you know, you'd put the St. Paul Dispatch, you know, inside your breezers." Because again, paper was all that was available. That was your option back then. And yeah, in Teddy Roosevelt's case, could have led to something just awful. I'm sure you've talked about food in the book as well. Everything from donuts to whitefish livers. Anything that you would recommend that people get out of their comfort zone and see or try?
Oh, absolutely. Oh,
definitely.
Yeah.
Friday morning fish fry.
Friday
morning fish fry.
Ooh.
It's a tradition at Oliver's Bakery in Kenosha. The owner, she's owned it for 40 and worked and owned it for over 40 years. And so we asked her, you know, "Hey, where did this tradition start?" And she says, "I don't know. It's just forever, you know, that's everything that she's known." And but every Friday morning, they have a fish fry. You can buy fish and shrimp. And, you know, you don't get coleslaw and the sides, but it's a take home. But it's an old-fashioned throwback bakery, and the bakery's incredible, too.
Well, the fish was pretty good, too.
Oh, it was really good, yeah.
And the people, I mean, I was amazed. I didn't think that people would come to get fish at 7:30 in the morning, but they were lined up the door.
Well, again, it's part of the culture. Secret, Wisconsin, a guide to the weird, wonderful, and obscure. Tom and Christy Manis are the co-authors. Thank you so much for your time. We appreciate it. We learned so much.
Thank you. Thank you for having us.
Have a great day, and best of luck with the book and the book tour, and get to see them if you can. Terry Bell's next. You're up north.
Thank you.
Thanks. Tomorrow on Up North News Radio, we'll talk to Hans Breitenmoser about export markets for Wisconsin farmers. I mean, billions and billions of bushels of our crops go to feed people around the world. And yet there's a member of Congress from Wisconsin on the House Agriculture Committee that wants to stifle some of that export market availability for Wisconsin farmers. We'll talk about that tomorrow morning. Then on Wednesday, we have our weekly climate check feature, our homeroom report, including a new study from the Wisconsin Policy Institute on voters' appetites for school referendums and local government referendums. So a lot to come yet this week, but yet to come this morning, Civic Media News Director Terry Bell has three things you need to know to get the week started. And Terry, good morning. There's no doubt, of course, we started off the show with thing number one, which is just a very historic day, not in a great way for our country.
Yeah, the first time ever a former president of the United States is being faces a trial in criminal court. So, yes, it is a very historic day, and as you say, you know, not for the right reasons.
No, and it all starts with jury selection today, which, now again, there won't be live cameras in the courtroom, but that would be, you know, you're going to take hundreds, maybe thousands of people around Manhattan and try to find, you know, 12 who can be impartial and weigh the case, and this just sounds daunting. I do not envy the people who have to do that screening today.
That in and of itself might be a huge deal as far as, you know, the ability to get this thing going. That's an excellent point.
Mm-hmm. Second thing on the list here, and we didn't talk about it nearly enough on Friday, that one of the Supreme Court justices, her term is up in April of next year. And up until late last week, we assumed that Progressive Justice Ann Walsh Bradley would be running for another term, but that's not happening now.
No, she kind of dropped a bomb on Thursday. Not a lot of people saw it coming because she had in previous interviews said that it was her plan to run for election. You know, but she is 73 years old. She has been serving on the high court for, you know, since the mid-1990s. So, you know, this is a point in life where, you know, one may give serious thought to taking the foot off the gas a little bit and relaxing. And so what this does is, for the time being, sort of put the race in flux a bit, since, you know, on the progressive side, instead of a known commodity, now you're probably going to have at least a primary. You know, there is no partisan primary in Supreme Court, but it opens things up in a way that people did not anticipate before. So it depends on the strengths of the candidates that do step forward. And already there's been a couple of names that have been put forward. Former State Representative Chris Taylor, who is now a judge, and Dane County Judge Susan Crawford. Those are two of the names that have come up to the surface the quickest as this process begins.
I don't know Judge Crawford. I did serve in the legislature with Chris Taylor, and knew that she had become had been appointed judge, and then I think elected a judge since mm-hmm. that time. So I'm aware of her. Now, of course, on the conservative side of this nonpartisan race, you've got former Attorney General Brad Schimmel. Has, you know, all but declared as well. So there's almost certainly going to be a primary. However many progressives, however many conservatives get in, it's, you know, one primary, and then the top two candidates move on to the April general election next year. And what makes this fascinating and maybe, Terry, depressing to other people is the conservative side of things, they're going to come at this full bore because they have a chance to then retake control of the court for conservatives. They could go back to a 4-3 majority. And if they don't get it, they won't get another chance until 2028, because the justices in 2026 and 2027 that are up are conservative justices. So there wouldn't be a chance to pick up. So it's either next year or 2028. And that's the thing that's going to, I'm sorry, it's going to depress some people, but it means that once again, like 2022, we're going to get past this presidential election and the election for U.S. Senate and legislature and everything. We're going to get to this November, and people just want a break, and there's not going to be a break. We're going to jump right into the campaigning for that April election. And for Wisconsin voters that are like, oh, you know, what is that? Wisconsin's just that important of a state that we have these close elections.
And the stakes are arguably even higher for all the reasons that you mentioned. You know, with all the attention and money that went into Janet Protasiewicz versus Dan Kelly, I would expect the stakes here to be even higher, and the rhetoric as well.
Oh, without a doubt. It's going to be so much more expensive. The outside groups that are going to come in, and when outside groups come in, I mean, they'll just say just the nastiest stuff because they're essentially the bad guys so that the candidate can be the good guys. And I guess I would just, having now acknowledged that it's almost depressing that we're going right into another campaign, I would be remiss if I didn't say, well, that's good. Plug into it. Plug into it, because, you know, if we didn't have people participating in our democracy, then, you know, you don't want to know the caliber of folks that would step in if voters don't. And all of this is made possible by people who pay their taxes as part of as part of a functional government. And that's where we find ourselves on this April 15th. So from this show's standpoint, this is your last reminder. Get her done today.
Yeah, for sure. This is the last time. If you can't come up with, if you end up owing and you can't come up with the money, file today anyway, or at least file for an extension, but put as much as you can toward what you owe, because the fees and the interest do rack up. So that's what people recommend for sure. There has been some efforts at reform in other states. Unfortunately, Wisconsin taxpayers don't get a chance at this time around, but free filing program called Direct File from the IRS is available in 12 states this year, where people can file their taxes for free if they meet certain qualifications, and that they actually cover quite a lot of people. And that's what a lot of people have been saying for a long time, is that the way we're required to file our taxes in this country is a bit burdensome for a lot of people and doesn't need to be this way.
Burdensome is putting it mildly, much like our healthcare system. Our tax system does not have to be this complicated. I mean, there are a lot of things in life that have to be complicated, but not like this. And I'm also not saying that, oh, it's so simple, it should go on a postcard. No, not that. Not that simple. But somewhere there is middle ground to make filing taxes easier, and I just hope we keep making progress toward that. Terry Bell with three things you need to know to start the week. Terry, thank you so much.
Thank you, Pat.
All right, have a great day. Again, tomorrow we'll talk to Hans Brighton Moser about farm exports. Don't forget our Women Win Wisconsin segment on Thursday, now powered by our friends at Motherhood for Good. And that'll do it for us on a Monday morning. Up North News is a separate entity from Civic Media, but we're just thrilled to partner with them for these 2 hours every weekday morning. Up North News is the Wisconsin digital outlet for Courier, a pro-democracy news network building a more informed, engaged, and representative America. I'm Pat Kreitlow. Thanks for spending some time up on the lake with us. We'll see you tomorrow.